Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The Lindsay Clancy trial, we're more than a week now into testimony at Plymouth Superior Court, and the prosecution has spent every one of those days building basically the same argument. If you're sitting there going, didn't we argue this yesterday? You're not alone. She was deliberate. She was meticulous. She planned it. But after a week of their own witnesses on the stand, some of what the jury is hearing sounds a lot more like the defense's case than the prosecution's. Eric Faddis is a defense attorney, former prosecutor, and he is with us to help us break down where this case is at, where this case is going now that we're thus far into it. Robin is away today, but he'll be back on Monday. Eric, let's start here. The prosecution obviously has built their entire first week around the one image of January 24th, 2023. Lindsay Clancy built a snowman with her kids. She texted photos to Patrick. He told the jury she was having one of her best days. She placed a takeout order, picked up medicine at CVS. He did. And then a couple hours later, all three of the kids were dead. Prosecution wants you to believe it was the best day ever. They keep going, it was the best day. Because she was, and then she planned to kill her kids. That she was planning to kill her kids. And that was what part of made it the best day, that while she's building the snowman, she's sitting there thinking, gee, I can't wait for those exercise bands. Despite begging for help from anyone who would actually listen, isn't that the hardest part to sell to the jury? That she was suffering from psychosis, because it really kind of sounds like the actions of a person in the midst of a psychotic episode. If you're building a snowman with your kids and then you're killing them in the next breath, that sounds like psychosis to me. That doesn't sound like the best day ever. It doesn't feel like they're making their argument very strong to the jury. I don't know. That's my take. What's yours so far?
Yeah, Tony, the prosecution has done a great job so far at supporting the defense's case. That they started with Patrick Clancy, the husband. He was like the most sympathetic guy there is. Mm-hmm. Besides the children, he's the biggest victim there is in all of this. And he was almost every chance he could get making points that were helpful for the defense. And now that the prosecution has this kind of theory where they're like, hey, she was running these errands. She knew what she was doing. This was all on purpose and was going to crescendo into this like gleeful delight in the strangulation of her three children. It's just such a non sequitur. It goes so left that the jury is like, what? That story doesn't even logically follow.
I hope that's where they land with it. We obviously won't know till they go back there and start deliberating. Kevin Reddington stood up in front of the judge and told him his client does not contest the government's case in chief. She killed her kids. We know that. That has been established. Obviously, the prosecution wanted to get as much mileage out of that as they could because it's heartbreaking. It's horrible. But it's not up for debate. She killed the kids. The blood is hers. The exercise bands are the murder weapons. The DNA matches. He volunteered to save the prosecution from calling dozens of witnesses to prove chain of custody, which was going to be the next rabbit that they pulled out of their hat. The prosecution, if they wanted to win the case, would seemingly want this emotional, devastating testimony in front of the jury. But it's out now. It's not going to be there. Are they happy about that? I mean, who does this advantage more when you pull all of those pieces of devastating testimony out? And I guess my other question is, the prosecution didn't seem all that, like, you know, ready to fight to keep it in either.
Under these circumstances, sometimes the defense attorney seems like, oh, hey, we want to save the jury a bunch of time. I'm looking out for y'all. Like, this is, I want to make this easier on you guys. We're conceding this thing. And it looks like a really noble act. And perhaps it is in a sense. But also, it is gaining them a tremendous benefit by not having to repeat some of the more potentially grisly and problematic details of the prosecution's case that would have been drilled into the jury's head over and over again. We're avoiding all of that. And so it not only does it look good to the jury, but tactically from defense standpoint, I think it's a super smart move.
I mean, it's a very smart move. Are you surprised at all that the judge was okay with pulling this out at this stage in the game? There was already planned for this to be a 6 to 8 week trial that was on the books. They were ready to go with it. We knew going in that that she killed the kids, that this was not really up for debate. I guess why the change of course now? Why does Reddington's argument suddenly land with the judge that we don't really need to go down this road? She's admitting to it. She has the whole time. Why do we keep pounding this into their minds? Is the judge just like, this is getting redundant and making the best decision for integrity of a trial or what?
Perhaps. And I would have anticipated the prosecution would have challenged this measure a little bit more because really the prosecution does have a right to put on their case within the lawful parameters of the rules of evidence and everything. But if they want to say, hey, you know, we appreciate the defense would stipulate to this, but we think the jury needs the full picture. We think they need the details. We think they need the perspective here that we're going to present. And so then you just sort of strengthen some of the points, you're bolstering some of your own points in going through that process. I thought the prosecution would push back more, in which case oftentimes the judge is like, hey, it'd be nice if the prosecution would agree, but they're allowed to put on their cases they want. We're going to let these witnesses do it. But the prosecution kind of didn't put up a big fight about it.
I'm kind of surprised by that. I am kind of surprised that the prosecution didn't put up more of a fight. I'm not accusing them of this, and this is just kind of pure conjecture question here, and not necessarily about this case specifically. But have you ever seen in your career as, you know, as a defense attorney, also as a prosecutor, in just witnessing many cases, do you ever see it where a prosecutor, you know, it's obviously their job to prosecute this case, where it kind of gets phoned in at a certain point, where maybe they're not really in it to win it. Maybe they don't really believe in what they've been assigned to prosecute, but it's their job. They have to go and prosecute it. And they pull back on certain things that they too think, yeah, this is getting kind of ridiculous. Do you think that could be going on here, or does that ever go on in cases where the prosecutor is like, yes, it is my job to toe this line, but I don't even really believe the line I'm towing.
Tony, it's like you've worked in a prosecutor's office before. That absolutely goes on all of the time. You know, publicly, they've got to put on this front like, hey, we believe wholeheartedly in all these cases we prosecute, including this one. But internally, there can be some dissent. There could be some folks who are a little iffy on what the objectives of the office are and whether they pertain to this case. So certainly I've seen cases where a prosecutor, you know, sometimes their boss makes them. I'm not saying that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. There, but sometimes they don't necessarily agree with some of the directives they receive from the top. But it's a chain of command kind of thing in most prosecutors' offices. It's almost militaristic at times in my experience. And so that happens.
Yeah, I mean, what is that like when you're in that sort of a situation where you I mean, everybody's human. Everybody has jobs to do. I mean, oftentimes you hear this argument against defense attorneys where how can you represent somebody like that? Because everybody deserves a defense. That's why we have defense attorneys. That's we'd be in a horrible state if they didn't exist because not everybody is guilty. It's not often that it's talked about on the prosecutor end of these sort of things, but that's your job. I mean, you're working there for the government to prosecute a case. They say, here's the one you're going after. If you fundamentally disagree with it, do you have many outs? Do you ever like, I have fundamental reasons to disagree with this and I'm not your person for this case? Or is it just sometimes, well, here's what's on your desk. Make lemons out of lemonade.
might depend on the boss. You know, I've worked in offices where if you voice some moral concern about a case, even if the boss doesn't agree with you, they might say, hey, I appreciate where you're at with that. And we're not going to make you do something that's against your conscience. And we disagree with you and we'll put a different prosecutor on it. Sometimes that's how it works out. Sometimes it's like, hey, I don't think we should be doing this. I'm not sure this person is guilty. And the boss is like, you know, pipe down, you just kind of trudge ahead as a soldier out there. And those things happen all of the time. And those office dynamics creep into play as well. So, you know, not every prosecutor wholeheartedly believes in their case like they may present. Same with defense.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you want, you know, if you're the boss and you're wanting to get a case prosecuted and you want to win your case, whoever you are putting onto the stage of the courtroom to fight the case, you want them to be in it to win it. You want them to believe in it. But sometimes you get the folks that aren't there, and then that ultimately, probably indirectly, gets communicated to a jury, and you don't always have the best of results as to where that would want to go. The toxicologist testified that every drug in Lindsay's system was at a therapeutic concentration. They're really focusing on the math here and not so much the mental end of it, meaning each one individually was within a prescribed range. Okay, great. That doesn't really tell us a whole hell of a lot. The one drug that was slightly elevated, Seroquel, still wasn't anywhere near a toxic level, but there is a woman who was on 13 different psychiatric medications here that we're talking about at the same time. The prosecution is saying, see, the drugs she was on were in range. They're not Tic Tacs. She wasn't taking the recommended dose of sugar for the day. These are powerful drugs that work differently with different people. This is not rocket science. This is just common understanding of how these sort of drugs work. The prosecution is essentially saying that all drugs work the same for everyone as long as they're in range. So it can't be the drugs that cause this. I mean, number one, it's nonsense. But even more, she had postpartum psychosis and bipolar. Even without the drugs, she could fall into a psychotic state. Why are they relying so heavily on the drug argument here when it really can very easily be debunked and fall flat, not even with conjecture, just with pure facts and how these things work?
Of course. You know, I think the prosecution's trying to say this wasn't crazy because she was being treated for crazy and the treatment appears within the therapeutic levels. So that can't be the reason. It had to be purposeful, knowing murder. But I think that rings a little hollow. Like, we all know, gosh, if you're not crazy before, if you're given a 13 drug cocktail, the chances that you are going to be at some point is substantially increased. Like, I just think all of that stuff going on neurochemically in your body, combined with the severe mental health issues of bipolar and postpartum psychosis, all of those together. And also what it looks like too, Tony, from the defense side, is that she's trying to address these things. She's not being reckless and flopping off and running in the middle of the highway or something. She's trying.
I don't know. Am I wrong for being surprised that their arguments on the prosecution side just seem to go completely against just basic understanding of how medications work? I mean, it's like they're asking the jury to live in a world that doesn't exist, in a land of make-believe on how cause and effects work with prescription medication, with psychosis. If you were to believe, I guess in the world of Massachusetts, that's a great place to have a child because postpartum psychosis doesn't exist, postpartum depression doesn't exist, none of these problems go into play, and mixing medications at different levels and all of that, they work like Tic Tacs. Everything just works great in Massachusetts, I guess, at least according to the prosecution.
Yeah, you know, Tony, I think that the higher ups in prosecution and law enforcement said, we have three dead children, and it wasn't an accident. They were strangled to death. There's got to be a crime in there. We're going to find it, and we're going to prosecute it. But as you go down that road and there are mental health evaluations, there are further details that are revealed. There are new things that come to light about a history of a person seeking help and experiencing problems, trying to contend with them. I think it really gets mucked up. Then it's not so clear that there was a crime that was committed under these horrendous circumstances. But I think the prosecutor is just too far down the lane on that, that they can't turn around now. And as some of the commenters have said, it looks like they're like pulling off or you know, not totally in it.
I mean, it feels like spaghetti on the wall. Like, will this one stick? Let's see if this one does. Another one of their greatest hits that they like to pull out is the term Coleman Cooperative. The prosecution put a psychiatrist on the stand who examined Lindsay days after January 24th and said she was Coleman Cooperative. That's supposed to prove she wasn't psychotic. But on cross, Reddington, he got the same psychiatrist to admit that a person can be in psychosis and still appear calm and cooperative and coherent, like this is some sort of mystery. The prosecution's own expert just told this jury that that looking normal doesn't mean you are normal. Does that testimony destroy the prosecution's entire theory? Is the prosecution phoning this in because they know their case makes no medical sense at this point?
Gosh, you know, I just can't help but wonder if they felt sort of pressure in the community to move forward because they have three dead kids. But then, you know, you're trying to put so what you have is this objective, and then you try to, through a confirmation bias sort of approach, tailor your case to meet that. But it's not adding up and it's not really following in a logical fashion. And so, you know, I think perhaps they're just trying to show like, hey, we made the test of this. There are three dead kids. We did our best. And maybe they know it's a foregone conclusion that it's likely to be not guilty.
Yeah. I mean, the jury heard Reddington read from Lindsay's own journal, the diary. That was another big part of this. Entries she wrote in the weeks before January 24th. I feel like I'm drowning every day. Horrible insomnia and anxiety, which is causing depression. I want to die, written in there. The prosecution says a woman was lucid enough to document her own spiral, was lucid enough to plan three murders. The defense says those words are the spiral, caught on paper in real time. Which side does that journal help?
I think it shows a person who has had an ongoing struggle with severe mental health issues. And it's not just somebody saying that. It's not just a hired gun at the trial who's been paid to say that. This is a historical record. You know, we can see a glimpse into her head and just how chaotic and distressing and confusing that must have been. And I've got to imagine that resonates with the jury. They look at this, they could be transported to where the defendant was when she was writing that, in a sense. And I think, you know, it shows an ongoing mental health thing as opposed to a calm, calculated murderer.
At the end of the day, the prosecution here has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that she was sane. It's not the other way around. And that's a little bit different in Massachusetts. The proof has to come from the state that there was sanity involved. And again, it feels like they're throwing spaghetti at the wall, seeing what's going to stick to do that. The prosecution has the toxicology. They have the best day. They have the calm hospital exam, but they also have 13 medications, a psych hospital admission 3 weeks out, and a woman in a wheelchair who clearly intended to die that night. Is anything the prosecution has put up enough to prove sanity beyond a reasonable doubt thus far?
I would say absolutely not, in my opinion. I don't think we're even close to that. And you're right that this is a significant wrinkle in the case, in the law, because in a lot of jurisdictions, it's actually the burden of the defense to show mental disease or defect and not being able to tell right from wrong. Here, the prosecution basically has to disprove that. And that's hard to disprove. And so in closing, if I'm defense, I'm like, hey, your jury, you don't have to decide whether she was legally insane. You have to decide if there's a reasonable doubt as to whether she's legally insane. And that's a lower threshold. It's a little easier to get there. And I think that we're much closer to that than we are sanity.
Eric, you've seen the comments on this case. You've been talking about it here. You've been talking it all over the place. I always like the comments because it's interesting. It kind of gives you an idea of like what a jury pool is like out there. Some people very much understand and see the medical end of this, the psychiatric end of this. Some people are hell-bent on not seeing it. And I don't think you're ever going to get some of them there. For whatever reason, it is. It is what it is. It's what they're dealing with. 18 people on this jury. This is not a civil case. So you have to have across the board. Everybody's got to agree. Either she, you know, did this or did not do this, or it's not that she did or didn't, but was she mentally there? Was she responsible for doing this, mentally capable of doing this, or was she basically insane? Where do you see this landing with a jury? Do you see 18 people agreeing in any direction on this case?
At the very least, just in my opinion, how it's been going so far, I think it's going to be not guilty, or at the very least, it's going to be a mistrial in which the jury cannot unanimously come to a guilty verdict. That being said, Tony, so I've talked with several friends about this, yeah, including women who are mothers, and some of them see it very differently. They see it as she could have done more to try and protect her family from herself when she had knowledge that she herself was a threat. And she, and in their eyes, she didn't do enough. So I'm just saying, I think reasonable minds could differ on it. And although I see it one way, who knows what's going to happen back in that jury room?
Yeah, I don't know. If I'm a betting person, I think I'm going on a hung jury still. Even in the clear, and I think Reddington's doing a wonderful job. I have all the confidence in him once it's his turn to really take the stage here. But I don't have a lot of confidence in humans. That's where I don't think it's going to end with a clear answer. And then do they do the whole thing over again? Or does the DA just say, you know what? Maybe this shouldn't be prosecuted this way. I don't know. We'll see where it goes. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts over there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.